Sufferies, it's your boy Marty here to introduce this episode of TFTC. This trip is brought to you by our good friends at River. River is here to make it as easy as possible for you to stack Bitcoin, to stack sats, as we like to say, as the kids like to say these days. You can DCA on River very easily, and if you do, you're not going to pay any fees on those buys. You can set limit orders if you have a price target that you want to buy at, and the price of Bitcoin goes that way. You can set a limit order to trigger a buy there. They have River Link, which is the easiest way to gift Bitcoin to individuals. You set an amount in River, you create a link, you text it, you email it, you DM it to somebody, they click the link, and they can sweep the funds into a wallet of their choice. They have built everything in-house at River. They understand the problem that trusted third parties bring into situations, so they don't depend on companies like Fortress Trust or anything like that. They build all their wallet infrastructure. They build all their Lightning infrastructure in-house to make sure they eliminated that third-party, trusted third-party risk. So go to river.com/TFTC. Sign up for an account today. It's the best place to stack Bitcoin. This rip was also brought to you by good friends down the hall, Unchained. Unchained is also here building things the right way in the Bitcoin world. Everything that Unchained does revolves around multisig. They have their Vault product, which is a 2 or 3 multisig quorum, which helps you eliminate single points of failure in your custody model. It's a 2 or 3 quorum where you hold 2 keys, Unchained holds 1. They also have their IRA product, which, interestingly enough, was talking about it this morning. If you're thinking about buying the Bitcoin ETF in your IRA, I would seriously consider looking into Unchained's IRA product. If you look at the compounding fees of the ETFs compared to what you would pay with Unchained's Bitcoin IRA product, they eat a lot of the value of your IRA over time, the ETFs do, compared to Unchained's IRA product, which allows you to hold your keys too. 2 or 3 multisig quorum, you hold 2 keys, you can possess the Bitcoin in your IRA with Unchained. Take some proof of work, but it's worth it in the long run. They also have Sound Advisory. If you're looking for an RIA who understands Bitcoin, they're offering that service as well. So go check it all out. Go to unchained.com. Tell them the TFTC sent you. They're doing things the right way, building the future financial platform using Bitcoin's native multisig properties. This report was also brought to you by good friends at CrowdHealth. CrowdHealth is here to create a new way for you to pay for your healthcare cost. Incumbent insurance is notoriously opaque, impersonal, expensive. CrowdHealth is a different model. It's a crowdfunded model. You join the CrowdHealth community. You pay a monthly fee. If you ever have a health event, you go to CrowdHealth, say, hey, I'm going to the doctor. You go to the doctor, you get your bill. You give it to CrowdHealth. They negotiate the price lower. You pay the first $500. And then the CrowdHealth community crowdfunds the rest. They've had 100% of bills paid to date. They can't guarantee it, but the model is working. I'm a user of it. Me and my family have been on CrowdHealth for 2 years. We love it. It's way cheaper than Cobra, which we were on before CrowdHealth. It's way more personal. We have a health advocate that we can talk to at any given point in time. And then it's just great to know that CrowdHealth's there to negotiate on our behalf, which the insurance companies certainly weren't doing when we were using health insurance. So if you're a freelancer, a small business looking to give your employees a way to pay for their healthcare, consider CrowdHealth. Go to joincrowdhealth.com/TFTC. Sign up today and you'll get $99 for the first 3 months of your membership fees. Last but not least, this rip was brought to you, but Bitcoin Talent Co. is also sponsoring this episode. If you're looking for a recruiting firm built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners, go to bitcointalent.co, tell them the TFTC sent you. If you're a company looking to hire as we rev up for what looks to be another bull market, don't go to a run-of-the-mill recruiting firm that doesn't understand Bitcoin. The founders of Bitcoin Talent Co. understand Bitcoin multisig. They understand custody. They understand mining. They understand Lightning. They're going to be able to find you the talent that you need to build out your company. So go to bitcointalent.co. If you need full-time employees, if maybe you need contract work, they have their flex program, which allow you to tap into part-time CFOs, part-time CMOs. If you have a design sprint that's going to take a few weeks and you only need a UX designer, they have people on their flex roster that will be able to do those projects for you. bitcointalent.co. Tell them the TFTC sent you. And last but not least, this rip was brought to you by our good friends at Salt of the Earth. I had Sean on yesterday's episode was a great episode. Salt of the Earth is an electrolyte packet that you put in your water. They have two flavors, orange and pink lemonade. They're delicious, and I've been using them for about 4 months now, and it's seriously helped me recover from workouts. If I have a little bit too much to drink one night, I drink one of these. I feel immediately better. So go to DrinkSote, DrinkSote.com/TFTC. Check it out. I highly recommend it. You're going to get 15% off your first order with that TFTC code. Enjoy this rip.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
When you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In a world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
And we are live. Jason Brett, welcome to the show.
Marty, how you doing? Good to be here.
Doing well. This is a bit of an emergency podcast that we've thrown together in response to the EIA's survey request for the Bitcoin mining industry. It seems to be driven by the Department of Energy, rushed through rather quickly over the last couple of weeks. Oh, somebody's calling me here. Let me ignore that. Yeah, and it came out of nowhere, it seems, and it is forcing the industry, the Bitcoin mining industry, to formulate a response rather quickly. I think before we make any assumptions, maybe we describe what you've been working on the policy front, your experience, and how you're viewing this survey, this registry, if you will.
Yeah, so I'm an advisor to the Bitcoin Policy Institute. And I've been in the space for about 7 years now. I think, you know, in terms of the policy and considering Bitcoin mining, there really has not yet been anything on the federal level regarding agencies doing anything. And the start of the federal policy on Bitcoin in general kicked off with an executive order 2 years ago, executive order from Biden on digital assets. Part of that was concerns about sustainability, ESG. It's important for people to remember President Biden is it's his top priority, right, about concerns about the environment. So part of this looked into the energy use of proof of work systems. And they talked in that, if you read through the executive order, one of the findings was that maybe to the, you know, these agencies, federal agencies, could guide state and local partners on potential alternatives to proof of work, as well as looking at the energy consumption and better understanding it. So what you have is you have an executive order 2 years ago that's saying, we need to learn more about Bitcoin mining, we need to understand more. And at that time, the Bitcoin Policy Institute responded. We had talked to people in the White House about the program, and there was good feedback. Troy Cross had been the lead really on that. As you know, Troy is really the master of this area. But what you had was, and forgive the DC speak for your listeners, but kind of you had what's called a soliloquy, okay, which is where Elizabeth Warren writes a letter saying, I think these agencies should start to look into what Bitcoin miners are doing at the federal level. And, you know, the mining contingent, if you remember Michael Saylor and I think a few other major players went and talked to the, you know, Department of Energy saying, look, this is a little overblown. We don't know if this is the right angle. But as we know now, this EIA has now decided on this emergency basis. And I say emergency lightly because as you've explored and I've explored too, these are very well thought out survey questions. Like, I mean, for an emergency, it's like they put together these well thought out questions and thoughts. Seems like it would have taken at least a few weeks to put together. But now in what they call an emergency to look into the amount of energy that Bitcoin mining is used. And they cite things like the Bitcoin mining price. So what, and we now know, because we saw the EIA put out on its website yesterday, not only information about why they were doing it, which is when I call it a soliloquy, that's the response. The agent is saying, we hear you, Senator Warren. We're doing what you're asking. We're trying to find out all this information about how much energy Bitcoin miners are using. But the other thing that besides that response is they already started giving data of their own analysis of how much energy Bitcoin mining is using. So in a matter of 24 hours, Marty, we've gone from, we need to explore on an emergency basis how much energy Bitcoin mining is using, to within 24 hours, the agency putting up the website, all these numbers and data they've explored saying Bitcoin energy is really bad. So at a minimum, I think there's lots of concerns, but the baseline concern is that there's a bit of confirmation bias because they're already assuming that it's bad for the environment. So this survey to them might just result in saying, yes, we agree it's bad for the environment. The real concern, and it's a legal matter, has to do something called West Virginia versus EPA. And I say that because that's a really important Supreme Court decision. We've heard President candidate when he was running, Vivek Ramaswamy, say this is probably one of the most important court decisions in our time as it relates to Bitcoin, because it specifically prohibits the agency from doing exactly what it's doing. So what it means is it can't focus on a particular industry based on like ESG. So it can't just go after an industry saying, we think there's too many problems with the environment of what your industry is doing. And the Supreme Court, highest court in the land, in West Virginia versus EPA, you know, West Virginia won. And basically what that means is the letters that Senator Warren sent encouraging this agency to do this is probably in violation of that finding by the Supreme Court. And so people are now being told, as you pointed out, like if you're a Bitcoin miner and you see these letters, it's like it's under criminal law if you don't report or whatever. But it's very possible this whole exercise, what the EA is doing, could be challenged in court, and we could potentially get a stay on what they're doing, or it'd be overturned because it was made very clear again and by the Supreme Court, you know, you can't do this to an industry just on the energy side alone.
Yeah. And we were talking before we hit record, this is somewhat of an unprecedented attack on a particular industry via the emergency authorization that was pushed through. Is that correct in your mind?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd never seen this at this level happen.
And I was talking to Reet Browning from Cathedra. He's the CTO at Cathedra Mining Company, and he was actually ex-Department of Energy, and he's pretty convinced that this was definitely pushed from above the EIA, from above the Department of Energy, because when you look at when the survey was proposed on January 24th and when it was approved, which was January 26th, like something happening that quickly within the U.S. federal government really never happens. And so it seems like they've been planning this behind the scenes and just getting their ducks in a row before basically pushing this forward.
Yeah, I mean, they invoke the emergency basis for them to execute it in the way they're doing it. But again, you look at those surveys and those questions, it's pretty evident that there was some time, considerable time put together. You know, one thing I've been thinking about with this too is this would almost be never tolerated in any other industry. And sorry for any Detroit Lions fans, but it's kind of like being a Lions fan where you've never won the Super Bowl. We're all kind of, you know, you're a nice guy, I'm a nice guy, but there's a sense of like, you know, if this was the NRA, this would be shut down already, right? If they said, we need to do a survey, figure out how many guns all Americans have. You know, the NRA would be at the White House. And I think there's a certain degree of like where we need to start thinking as a community, as Bitcoiners, of, you know, we hold a lot more power than we realize. You know, if people reach out, if we figure out ways of influencing and doing advocacy, you know, we can get this to go away. The only reason that we're even talking about this, and that it's likely next week, in my opinion, this is going to start this process of, because they said February to June, start going around and asking information, is there really isn't enough powerful force to kind of stand in their way to stop them from doing it, you know? And that's the problem of where this with new industry, and there's this element of we're starting to think about how Bitcoin could change the world and how it might affect things in government. And, you know, a lot of people don't like that. And this is an attack vector that, I have to say, unfortunately, like this is Elizabeth Warren has executed this one pretty well, and it's obvious from this that it's not going away. It's something we have to figure out an answer to.
Mm-hmm. And so I want to talk about what we can do as a response, but first let's dive into like the details of the survey. Is there any Fourth Amendment protection? Because it seems like this is a pretty egregious affront to privacy rights of individuals and corporations. It's literally asking mining companies to go to their electricity providers and have their electricity providers dox information to them about their other customers and their the overall percentage that Bitcoin miners are using with their overall capacity.
Yeah, I chuckle because it's, you know, we talk about Operation Choke Point. We've seen that about like the banks trying to cut off. Like I've been thinking this is like Operation Pull the Plug. Like, let's go to all the electricity providers, show who's giving the energy to Bitcoin, and then give the government the ability to, like, you know, chase them away from diverting all this energy to this unimportant project. The survey, that the idea is that it definitely, it talks about a commercial crypto asset miner. And what that's a tricky one, because you said it yourself, individuals or businesses. You know, I have a few Bitcoin miners in my downstairs, right? I mean, does that mean that if I get this survey, or it says all need to report, like, at what point am I a commercial endeavor, right? And there are EPA rules about pollution that certain industries have to comply with, but this is likely a Fourth Amendment violation because it's probing for information, right? And it's asking specific, like you say, asking for the electricity providers and the names of the electricity providers and giving just downright like information about your business that may be a competitive factor that you don't necessarily want to part with. So it crosses, it's a challenge for anybody. Like for me, I have to think about and say, well, does this apply to me? I mean, I have half a dozen miners downstairs, but like, am I a commercial miner? Do I just need to fill out this form in case? So there's a question of the who does this apply to? Because it's certainly casting a wide net. But it absolutely is a Fourth Amendment violation, because think about it. What if you're talking about like mining like something or doing something with computers? And they said, we need to know how much energy your computer is using, and like everybody has to tell you. So it seems hard to believe that it wouldn't violate that constitutional protection that we have.
I mean, they literally want the longitude, latitude coordinates of all your operations.
And you know, and that's what I'm trying to understand, because we saw that map, right, that showed 56 Bitcoin miners. So I feel like, do they already know the coordinates anyway? And they just, because then you have run the trouble of then you answer this form. And what if you get it wrong? And they then hold you in violation because you didn't answer truthfully. So the latitude and longitude is pretty priceless. But I mean, talk about a surveillance state. We've departed from the idea of, you know, we think the U.S. is against Bitcoin mining. You know, we know some senators have a problem with it, to like, this is when we actually see sort of the state at work. And I mean, this form, you know, you have to either mail it or fax it back or something. Can't even really, it's just clearly they have an operation for it. But, I mean, this is, I think there's some questions people need to ask. It starts with is like, what does this mean? Like when people come and talk to you, you know, should you even talk to them? Should you say, I need a lawyer first, you know, like just don't, I think it's going to require everybody to get legal representation to answer this form properly, to avoid any problems with the law later. And that's when you're papering an industry to death, which is unfortunate. But we've never, but to be honest, I mean, really, Marty, like I'm saying all this, and at the same time, I'm slightly at a loss for words, because this is really new territory. Can you think in your lifetime of an industry being sort of this collection process is just targeted? And I don't think anyone's ever heard of this before. So
Not in the United States, but we do have one example of another government doing this throughout Bitcoin's history, and that's Venezuela. They collected all this data and then took all the information and quickly confiscated everybody's miners to mine for themselves.
Yeah.
Which is the big, it's just something that everybody should be worried about.
Yeah. And look, we already know the US has confiscated a lot of Bitcoin, like in Mt. Gox. We don't know to the degree that they mine themselves, but I do think that what's critical here is that they're talking about in that memo that we saw today on the EIA website, concerns about, you know, this is what's happening in the United States because China shut off its Bitcoin mining. And so, you know, we know it's a growing issue in the US. And so there's clear policy reasons behind it, you know, that everyone's come to the US now, you know, to mine. And I think that the real danger here is, like, once they set up the registry and they've collected this information, what, like, next steps they're going to take. And that's, like you said, there's the confiscation, but in this case, is it extra taxes for using the energy? The problem, I think, that is, it's the once you have that registry set up and people just start complying with this, just by complying with it, it makes it looks like we think there's a problem, right? So that's why I think that setting up this registry, like, the what could the next step be? And I don't think it's confiscating the miners. I think to them, it's like shutting it off because they want to decarbonize, you know, the planet.
Yeah. And it's weird too, because a lot of the information they're projecting to want to understand better is already disclosed by many of the public miners, particularly, and even some private miners, particularly those participating in demand response programs. I mean, just 2 weeks ago, we had a -4% difficulty adjustment because miners were participating in demand response to send electricity back to the grid, making it more stable and creating a more stable pricing environment for residential consumers. And it is an overt attack. It feels that way. It certainly is that way. If it smells, walks like a duck, sounds like a duck, smells like a duck, it's a duck. And I guess that's the question. I mean, I wrote my newsletter. I've stayed up pretty late. I was a little tired, a little aggressive in my wording, but I think personally, I would say we should not comply. We shouldn't fill this out at all. Everybody, like you said, should get legal representation and fight this. And that's because over the last 3 days now, 2 days, I've been having conversations with different people in the industry. And that's, I think we should use this platform to say, like, it seems like there's a number of people ranging from the largest miners in the country to small private miners that are having these individual conversations, and there needs to be some way for everybody to get together and have a coordinated action together in solidarity against this. Because I think there could definitely be individual actors who want to be the ones who fight this fight, but I do think there's a need for solidarity across the industry to fight this particular aggression.
Yeah, and I think that, like, that word, and I read your newsletter, and I could, you know, feel your sense of it. And I think you're right. Like, when you started to say, at first, maybe this seemed like a positive thing, right? Like, they want to learn more information. But as you look more and understand the purpose of it, it doesn't seem like it's just simply, you know, let's do a fact-finding mission. And of course, the problem is, if we don't kind of cooperate, then they can say, well, like, they have all this stuff to hide, even though we're doing things like helping balancing the grid. The funny thing is, think about this for a second. Like, what's your least favorite U.S. agency of all, or most Americans? What would you say that the agency they dislike the most?
The IRS.
Perfect. So, even with the IRS, when you and I file taxes, it's not about this mandatory compliance that if you don't get your taxes perfect, you're going to, like, go to jail. It's I'm reporting based on what my records are. And then if there's a problem, you can come in and audit me. What I don't understand is, if they really genuinely wanted to figure out what this process was, of how the energy is used by Bitcoin miners. Have it be a self-reporting mechanism, you know, just like you report in your taxes. Like I said, no one likes to even do that, but ask the miners, send in the information. Don't send out, you know, this form saying it's mandatory, and if you do anything wrong, it could be a criminal violation. And that's where it's something, unfortunately, everyone has to get used to in this industry, is it's treating us like criminals, right? Like, it's kind of, we have to hit you over the head because you might not fill this out correctly because we don't really trust you in the first place. Plus, you're wasting all this energy. Instead of just saying, look, file your taxes, you know, maybe not your favorite thing, and really won't be your favorite thing if we have to audit you later, but, you know, you report to us. And to me, that's, at a minimum, it's not great, right? No one, like I said, no one likes the IRS, but you, at least you report what you, your income is. You know, it was always the joke, right? Did you cheat a little bit on your taxes, whatever, stuff like that. So if they want to learn all this information, they can do it that same way. But this is not in that, just let's report it in, like, no criminal violations if you don't know, just let's start collecting the information because we want to learn more and we want to see, you know, what we might, you know, want to do with this information and better understand maybe there's benefits to it. And so it just doesn't give us the benefit of the doubt. So at a minimum, I think some of this is worded needs to be changed. The form itself might be a problem or a violation of the way the form is put together. The reason I say the legal representation is it's not even if you had everything right, Marty, even if you had, you know, your miners, you know, your electricity and everything, the way the form says, you know, if you get something wrong, that's why I think everyone needs a lawyer to fill it out if you are going to fill it out, because what if you get something wrong? It's like a bit of a catch-22. And so there's lots of, I think there's room. Luckily, we live in a country where there's room to get lawyers to help us with this. We don't just have to comply. And I think there needs to be some congressional light shed on why was this emergency announced. And the biggest problem to me is this price increase, that Bitcoin went up in price. And so, mm-hmm. and their assumption that therefore that, you know, there's going to be more activity. It notably doesn't mention that a halving is coming up soon. I'd love them to try to evaluate what that might mean to it, but here we are. And maybe to get the Bitcoin ETFs like Cathie Wood and others involved in this conversation, because you have all of Wall Street now benefiting from a spot Bitcoin ETF. And this policy looks like it's a bit of a reaction to that, you know, like, I wouldn't put it past the sort of the progressive attitude in this country of the minute something starts to be successful in a capitalistic light, you know, New York embracing these Bitcoin ETFs, prices burning, and of course it came back a little bit. You know, this is when we start to see that the liberals get really crazy, right? I'm not trying to take sides between, like, you know, conservatives and, but that's what they tend to do. They tend to just start to go in and use these backdoor mechanisms to get what they want anyway, even if it's really already been decided. This is sort of policy, you know, there wasn't like a notice of rule saying we're thinking about doing this and everyone respond, or us respond and treat us like professionals and say, this is the kind of information you should be looking at if you're really interested in learning about the energy use of this industry. This is just, let's use a mechanism of the state to get what we want. And because they're terrified now that there's all these Bitcoin ETFs that Bitcoin might win and succeed.
Yeah. And going back to the congressional point, too, like, is that a way to prevent this from moving forward? As if somebody in Congress was like, hey, why was the emergency authorization used? Like, shouldn't this go through Congress, go through a vote first? Like, is there a roundabout way where Congress could stand up and say, hey, you should have passed this through us first? Like, you don't have the authority to do this.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to be a vote of Congress, but every federal agency has oversight from a committee. And right now there's the House Energy and Commerce Committee that would have oversight. The chair of that committee, Kathy McMorris Rogers from the state of Washington, could call a hearing or request information as to why this was asked for. Not sure how much of a Bitcoiner she is, but I do know she supports some of the broader, you know, concepts of like us being competitive against China. But that's really what you want, is you want some the chair of a committee who has oversight over this agency to send a letter, immediately send a letter asking questions, like, you know, a letter that would say that within 2 weeks, please explain what this is, what resources have you already deployed, you know, questions about it, and maybe even say, maybe even in the letter request, please wait on, you know, wait on this, hold off like a month until you come before Congress and can really explain what you're going to be going out and doing with all of this information.
Yeah. So how do you think the next 6 months plays out, ideally, in your mind?
Ideally, I think that people might take enough exception to this. It might affect the outcome of the presidential election, and a lot of this might be reversed, because right now this is a symptom of the Biden administration and the overwhelmingly progressive influence from Senator Warren. I think what I hope plays out, and what I think you'll see, Marty, is you'll see people come to us in this community, because people will realize if this can happen to this one industry, it could happen to any industry. And when you look at the amount of information that they're asking for, the degree to which they're doing it, it's a stifling of innovation. So I think that my hope would be in the next 6 months that they curtail this, and that a lot of the large miners have already given information to Senator Elizabeth Warren, you know, so maybe leave it at these are what the large commercial miners are. And I mean, hopefully get something like this shut down to the degree that there's enough pressure, right, from Congress to say this is an overreach on administrative level. And I think you're going to have a huge lack of noncompliance. And I don't say that to say people are going to like listen to your show and say, yeah, I'm not going to sign it. I think some people just won't. They'll look at it. They won't really be sure how to answer it. Some people may not even be aware they fall into this classification. I mean, there's been no notice, no press, no explanation how to do it. This is not like a friendly visit from, you know, your postal service person. This is like, you know, coming from a place of investigation. So I really have a hard time seeing how they're going to get the results they want if, in fact, they do pull all this stuff between now and June.
Yeah. And it's funny, the justification is we need to do this to make sure that our grids are secure and our energy systems are secure and everything this administration has done is a complete projection onto the Bitcoin industry specifically. But I wrote it in the newsletters, if you want to stabilize the grids, like, make sure that you're building more reliable baseload, spin up the leases on federal lands again, maybe finish the Keystone XL pipeline, maybe take all the red tape off of nuclear power generation. There's many other lower hanging fruits that the government could take advantage of instead of attacking a specific industry. And that's where I think the signal is they have to know this to some extent, and do they really care about Bitcoin's energy use, or are they using this, as you mentioned earlier, as an attack vector to hinder Bitcoin's proliferation throughout the economy and its adoption by individuals? Like, could something like this, the survey, go out, the data come back, and the government either manipulate the data or present it in a disingenuous way to fearmonger about all the energy that Bitcoin is sucking up?
Yeah. Or come up with policies for the electricity providers, right? Who give, like, maybe limit the amount of electricity they would be willing to give to this industry. This is where you would say, like, the dam has broke, right? And we're now, is this now the era of, like, Bitcoin mining regulation and what that looks like in the U.S., where there's actual federal regulations around the way you can mine Bitcoin?
I hope it doesn't get to that point. And that's what, one thing I wonder too, like, talking about allies, not only within the industry, but across industries. I mean, I've seen it up close and personal, very involved with multiple mining operations, throughout the country, and the utilities companies that we work with love us because we're able to provide them more revenue. They can buy power in bulk, pass those lower prices on to residents. But still, it's still early in that relationship between the energy sector and the Bitcoin mining sector. But this is something I've been saying at conferences and events over the last few months, is like, we really need to get allies in the energy sector and help leverage their lobby to come help us put our case forward. Like, hey, this is actually like really good for our energy systems and our companies, our bottom lines, and our ability to reinvest in infrastructure. And that's one thing I'm hopeful will materialize. But now with this registry form going out there, it seems like the time is nigh. We need to convince those in the energy sector to think we're valuable economic partners to come help us fight this. And as you mentioned, like West Virginia versus the EPA, they've certainly gone through this before. And is that the Chevron deference case as well, or is that separate? Mm-hmm.
That's the one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Also, you know, you have to remember, like, that there's things ebb and flow in D.C. We're in an election year. There's this one great documentary. I've got to try to find it. But it shows really, like, the cycles of the way Democrat presidents care about, like, ESG. And they show them, like, putting solar panels on top of the White House. And, like, as soon as Trump moves in or Bush moves in, they send construction workers on top of the White House and they take hammers and they knock the solar panels down, throw them off the roof, you know, put them away for 4 years until a Democrat comes back. So what I guess I'm saying is, I mean, this is, it seems a lot right now to us, right? Because this just happened. It's like, what does it mean? There's a lot of unknown. It's kind of scary. But, you know, within a year, if there's a new administration, like, all of this could go away really, really fast. And I think that's, to me, like, the hope at this point, because this is at, like, epic level of FUD about Bitcoin energy use. And it's likely that this was scrambled in an emergency way because they know that if it's under a new administration, whether it's Trump, Haley, or whoever, they're not going to put somebody in charge of an agency and do anything like this to Bitcoin. And I hate that Bitcoin has to become partisan that way, but I think for right now, that's at least what will take all of this kind of reporting stuff to go away. It's President Biden's in a little unusual. Like, he's really, really focused on ESG. And I've talked about this on other podcasts before too, of, you know, we hit this real roadblock with this administration because they decided to look at digital assets for the first time. You know, we had the huge market growth, everything bubbled up, and we just so happened to come across, like, a president that isn't just your average Democratic, you know, president who kind of cares about the environment, but has made it his number one priority. And so when you had those that really weren't fans of Bitcoin, you know, say, look, this is, well, we know it's not, but say, look, use of energy, it's completely contrary to your objectives. We're not going to get, you know, to your goals in 2050, you know, it's going to destroy the planet, which, you know, Elizabeth Warren has said as much in some hearings, we have to stop Bitcoin, it's destroying the planet. It was his number one priority as a president. And so I think that is why you're seeing this today, is the last couple of days, this emergency thing go through, because it is a priority of President Biden. This is his number one priority. And so that they've hit upon the idea of what proof of work is. They feel like it used a lot of energy. And to them, it's like backwards. It's like we're going back to the coal era, and it doesn't think through all the things that, you know, you've so eloquently talked about with maybe we need to go back to nuclear or anything like that. It's just like, oh, here we go back. We're just taking steps backward. When it's an emerging innovation, right? It's a new kind of money. It has so many possible uses, not just on the mining side, but so many uses in society. And it's just, so we just kind of hit this really bad timing, because we just had a president who's just been unusually worried about the environment and has been pandering for the most part to a lot of the environmental groups on a lot of these issues, not just Bitcoin. A lot of the you know, energy industries have been facing this now for the last few years with the ESG narrative.
Yeah, which is hilarious considering we just have to look over the Atlantic to Europe and I think they went first with this aggressive net zero energy policy, and it's been extremely detrimental to their quality of life and the stability of their energy systems and the reliability of the energy systems. And again, it is nonsensical in an election year, considering that most of his first term has been plagued by high inflation, particularly in the energy sector, which has come down over the last year. But there's what's going on in the Middle East. The price of oil could certainly go much higher rather quickly if things escalate there. And it's just weird that they're doubling down on this ESG policy when it's an abject failure everywhere you look, that it's been implemented at full scale.
Absolutely. And there's been a lot of folks who are now talking about reversing the ESG, right? Like, people are saying, we got to get rid of this, you know, as soon as this, it's definitely going to be something that's going to affect, you know, the election.
Yeah, and that's the other weird thing too, is like, obviously I've been a notorious anti-ESG advocate, but I mean, if you look at it, it's just like off-grid miners reducing methane emissions. If you care about ESG, Bitcoin is a perfect vehicle to sort of bring about a more efficient energy system, whether it's off-grid or on-grid. On-grid solves the E and the S, the social side of things, where it's like, hey, these miners can come in and create grid stability and create stronger revenue streams for individual utility providers or power plants. Like, that allows them to have a stronger balance sheet, which will allow them to get more creative with pricing, which typically benefits residential consumers with lower prices.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I know you said you don't want it necessarily to come to this, but my vision sort of 3 or 4 years out would be, we're still going to be able to mine Bitcoin, but the larger commercial enterprises of Bitcoin, think of somebody who shows up from Washington, D.C. in a suit and tie and, you know, puts on a hard hat and, you know, is the, you know, Bitcoin mining inspector, right? And it, you know, it's going to poke around, you know, look at what you're giving back to the grid, you know, questioning your practices. I don't think we'll get to, like, it won't be Venezuela. They won't co-opt it. I don't think they'll never shut down something, because remember that, you know, the same government loves and counts on our tax money, right? So they'll, how can we tax Bitcoin? How can we tax these businesses to bring revenue back to the government? But I think the end game here is that, at least for the larger Bitcoin miners, this is the sustainable path, no pun intended, is, I think 4 or 5 years from now, you might see sort of these inspectors from the DOE that come out and just poke around like they do any other aspect of energy production. And I'm not saying that's a good outcome, but because I think we'd still be able to do Bitcoin mining. I just think we might be seeing the era of regulation of Bitcoin mining in some degree or another in this country, because, you know, as you said, it's like anti-ESG, but we've moved in this country so far away of just basic freedoms. It's hard, you know, to imagine that an industry could ever just be left alone entirely.
Yeah. I have hope and we can get back to it. Hopefully Bitcoin succeeds and they don't have all the money they need to burden us with the pencil pushers and the scrutiny. It's just insane. Because when you think, like, the innovation that Bitcoin mining has brought the energy system, it's like palpable, it's tangible, it's very clear in the data. Like, the data's there, it's out. That's the most frustrating thing about this, is they're asking for data that's already public. They could easily find in public filings by companies like Riot, Marathon, Iris, whatever it may be, Stronghold. Like, what Stronghold's doing alone to solve the waste coal problem that exists in Pennsylvania. Like, that should be something that people are cheering on. There's this weird vendetta. I think it's because they can't control Bitcoin, the asset or the network, at the end of the day. And mining is just the attack vector they've chosen, because it's very visible and physical. So it's literally a physical attack vector that can be pinpointed and attacked.
It's funny that you say that too, because like for Riot and Marathon and these others, bears to mind, will this type of activity allow the larger Bitcoin miners to get bigger? Because you might have a lot of people who are smaller commercial miners who maybe can't afford or don't want to have to pay for a lawyer to fill out this form, or might just be kind of, you know, straight up intimidated by the form, or just say, this is not worth our business. If this is, you know, the US government's asking for all this information, just turn off the mines, you know, turn off the miners. So it might create a little bit more consolidation, which isn't a good thing, right? We need the decentralization. We need the smaller miners as well as the larger miners. But that's part of my fear with this, is not just about the substance of the form, but the manner in which it's being delivered and the business decisions that might come up for people saying, well, you know, I'll fill out the form this one time, but I'm getting out of this business because it's, you know, it's clearly this is something that, you know, I don't want to, like, now they're asking who my electricity providers are. So there's this element of, I guess, yeah, just kind of intimidation, right? That we're just extra burden, extra regulatory burden. You know, why would I want to be involved in this? So it's going to take the true believers to kind of push back. And, you know, one thing that's been done in the past, it was more about like the Bitcoin core developers. I'm trying to remember, it was like in 2016, but there were these like 50 lawyers in DC that got together and started offering like pro bono help. So that, I mean, that could be something, that's something I'll think about, like how can we coordinate to help get, you know, pro bono help for people who are going to be getting these forms so they don't just walk away from the business, and also so they can feel protected, you know, if they choose to answer the form.
Yeah. I guess that dovetails into a broader topic, which is the state of Bitcoin, the Bitcoin industry's influence over policy, which you touched on in the beginning. But what would you like to see in terms of the industry really getting smart about interacting with the federal government, despite whether or not we'd like to do it? It seems that you do have to play ball to a certain degree just to protect your interests and the profitability of your business and the ability to exist at all in the first place. Like, have we made progress in recent years? Is it happening fast enough?
Yeah, I do think we've made progress. Like, I mean, I'll toot the Bitcoin Policy Institute's horn. You know, I'm an advisor to them, but they responded, they engaged with the White House when they were looking at it. And some of their report did talk about the benefits of Bitcoin mining. So it's not, this is just one administrator and his sort of, dare I say, narrow view of what Bitcoin is and what the way it should be handled. But there has been open reception to the possibilities of the benefits of Bitcoin mining. And so I think we need to curate that. My belief for a long time has been we need to create something akin to, whether it's the NRA, people don't like that because they feel like it's just this far right, or something of the AARP. I mentioned the idea of the NRA on like the Progressive Bitcoiners podcast, and they didn't like that. Like, how are we going to sell that to progressive Democrats? But you call it the AARP, but if you have a group of people, even if they're in a minority and they believe in something strong enough, you need that grassroots support, which the playing ball part is finding some smart people, right, in Washington, D.C., who are also believers and who know who to speak to in power, who know how Washington, D.C. works, you know, understanding, you know, who to go talk to, the right people. And if you think about any time there's an action that the NRA doesn't like, I mean, that it's instantly stopped. You know, it's very hard to get any kind of bill, right, regarding, you know, guns. It's a Second Amendment issue. So the idea of the Fourth Amendment and finding that narrative to go with the fact that there's all these people out there that believe in Bitcoin, that care about it, that maybe you're willing to, you know, like you do with NRA, you know, chip in 10 or 15 bucks, get a magazine, but you're, you know, you have your support and build that up. I think that doesn't exist yet for us. It's starting to, like, BPI is a good start, but remember, it's a 501c3 nonprofit. So it doesn't actually, you know, go and try to change policy or change legislation directly with lobbying. So I think as Bitcoin gets bigger and there's like the Bitcoin ETFs are growing and other things, that you know, getting a good crew of Bitcoin lobbyists that can organize a grassroots campaign that would already be, instead of you and me talking like this, be already be in front of the right officials trying to, you know, get this changed or get this modified. Or, to be quite honest, this is already kind of done, right? The form's already printed and everything. The idea in DC is you want to try to get something before it's complete. So, like, you know, you maybe have the right people in play who, like, this is sort of the rumblings of what's going to happen, and they can run to the White House to sort of say, no, this is, you better not declare an emergency on, like, Bitcoin mining. That's, you know, absurd. So I do think that's the kind of juice that we need to protect Bitcoin. It goes very antithetical to the way a lot of people, including myself, believe. Like, I've always said, I'll teach anybody how you go talk to your congressman or talk to your, you know, local representative. I don't want to be like an intermediary or a middleman. I want it to be peer-to-peer, you know, but to one degree or another, to have the right messengers and build that grassroots support is going to be necessary to protect kind of the core tenets of what Bitcoin is about. And it's so great, the right to property, the right to code. There's so many aspects of this that makes it so much in the American spirit, the American way, that, you know, that's what I hope we can find. I think that would be a really exciting kind of grassroots movement to get together with. And, you know, I'll say this, like, some people in Bitcoin I've spoken to before on this, and they know I'm a lobbyist and everything. And, you know, they kind of, the question always comes up, Marty, in the debate goes into, well, why do we need you? You know, we don't want to lobby. We're just going to do our own thing and just sort of ignore, like, what DC does. And the problem with that is that there's people in DC that care about what you're doing. And this is, like, case in point. You know, if you just sort of ignore them, then they come up with all these things and they make up their own story. So you just, at some point or another, if enough people decide, you have your own storytellers there to kind of protect the turf. And as Bitcoin gets bigger, I think we're going to need that at some point to make it so we don't have these overbearing type actions. We're getting there. We're seeing some reactions. You know, BPI was on the phone all day yesterday, you know, David Zell and that group trying to figure out what to do. But we're not quite there yet where we have sort of the juice of an NRA or something to kind of just step in and push back. And I think most people in Bitcoin will come around to realizing this is part of the game. We need to just play that for now. So,
we'll know we've made it when the NBA is synonymous with the National Bitcoin Association and not the National Basketball Association. That's the goal, freaks, is to get there. One last topic to touch on, which I think is important to bring up, is states standing up for companies in their borders. Obviously, there's a big federal versus state standoff coming on down here in Texas right now at the border. We saw that trend of states asserting their autonomy from the federal government during COVID lockdowns. That seems like something that is becoming more prominent in terms of national politics, the state standing up and say, no, we're going to do our own thing. Do you see states standing up for the companies in their borders in regards to the federal government, or would that be impotent at the end of the day?
No, I think that would be pretty powerful. I mean, when, like, DeSantis tried to do the whole anti-CBDC thing, or say in Florida, we're not going to have a CBDC. I mean, the government prints money at the federal level, and it's not really, I don't know that the law would be effective, but, like, talking about Texas and the border and that, to that point, this is about a form. And if this is affecting, you know, your state and local businesses, I mean, this is just a classic case of federal overreach. You'll likely have a lot of state opposition to it. And, you know, the one thought I had when you were sort of sharing that is, like, you know, with Bitcoin, it's about the consensus, right? And a lot of times in government, when these programs start, it's a lot about, like, consensus and, like, do you get the results? So, like, you know, you send in, you know, people with the badge, you know, the enforcers, and saying, here, you know, fill out these forms. But, like, if enough people don't fill out the forms or don't comply, you know, that's, they don't have enough of a consensus. They don't have enough of the information that way. It's possible they just walk away. You know, they've already come up with their own conclusions. They already put out yesterday on their website how much Bitcoin energy is using, and looks like they have all this data, and they're, you know, talking about wanting to do this, you know, very careful data collection practices. the problems with these jokers is it's not like a geological survey. You know, there's actual people and businesses that you're exploring and kicking the tires around, and it's a violation of privacy. So absolutely. I mean, if we're willing to, if you sort of seeing what's happening, the dynamics in Texas right now, right, with the border, I mean, it's about filling out a form. You just have state reps just say, we're not filling it out. You know, our companies won't fill it out for you, and create a federal versus state, standoff.
Ah, this is what I love to hear. I'm getting excited with this talk. The rent is too damn high. The government is too damn big. We need them to get out of our life. It's funny. And again, it's just this stuff should be expected. Bitcoiners have been talking about these hypothetical adversarial situations for a decade and a half now. I mean, it should be expected. It just is disconcerting when it finally happens. It's like, oh God, here we go again. We got to spend a bunch of money, get a bunch of lawyers, write a bunch of newsletters, articles, get some data and fight back, spend a bunch of money to do this. And that's a frustrating thing, I think, for a lot of people in this industry, because I think, as you would agree, like the innovation that's happening, whether it's within the mining industry, at the payments layer, at the just sound digital money layer, it's extremely exciting, extremely encouraging for all of humanity. And to think that a bunch of 70 to 90 year old individuals in DC who really don't understand, or maybe they do understand, but just don't like Bitcoin from a philosophical and ideological perspective, are going to try to throw the baby out of the window because they don't like it. And it's just, get out of the way. It's very frustrating.
I mean, it's hard to believe we're about to have a potential presidential contest with people in like 8 decades of life each. Like, where's the hope? Where's the JFK or whoever you want to call it, right, of our time? And I think one thing that probably would be helpful would be to show Washington, D.C. the faces of, like, what Bitcoin mining is about, like, show that they're real people, real jobs, real professions. I think that's what we need to get to, because right now they're kind of able to dehumanize it. You know, it's like Bitcoin itself, it doesn't really exist. We don't know what it does, but it wastes all this energy. You know, showing stories of people who've made, you know, careers for themselves, you know, hired people, you know, get involved in the industry, and they're being responsible about the energy use, right? Working with grids. You know, there's a powerful story to tell, you know, for the Bitcoin mining community. And I think, you know, if we can figure out a way to tell it correctly, you know, then that's something that can push back on this. One thing, you know, just like with the, you know, the 51% attack is, you know, realize that some of these folks, like the environmental groups, this angle of attack, it's not going to go away. It's always going to attack it, just the way there will always be attackers to the Bitcoin network. We just have to make sure the incentives are aligned in such a way where we're able to keep, yeah, the sound money and everything else, you know, dream alive here in the U.S. And I think that it's, they picked the wrong country to try to pull this kind of stuff in.
Yeah, we're going to win. Jason, we're going to win.
Yeah.
It's not going to be easy, but nothing worth doing was ever easy. So luckily we have individuals like yourself who understand these problems very intricately, can help advise us as we're fighting this. And thank you for hopping on the pod. I mean, you DM'd me yesterday. I was like, can you record tomorrow? I think this is pretty important. So thank you for turning around quickly to have this conversation.
Absolutely. Pleasure talking to you, Marty.
Yeah. I think we'll post this right away, Logan. Just to get it out there, because the time we're pressed for time. The clock is ticking. We need we need to begin coordinating and fighting back against this. I think we'll win though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where can anybody listen to this, find out more about you, what you're doing, how you can help?
Yeah, DM me at my Twitter handle is at regulatoryjason. And also reach out to the Bitcoin Policy Institute, that's at BTC Policy. And, you know, we can direct you to sort of resources. I can definitely share, you know, start to think about a list of lawyers that I want to put together, to maybe get people support. the big, yeah, any questions at all, you know, you want to figure out how to talk to politicians, maybe I'll work on like sort of like a letter or something you can start to send in. But at the end of the day, like it's important to just not just fill out this form. There's lots of reasons, you know, talk to your business advisors, consultants, lawyers before you just fill out this form, because it's already February, right? And they said they were going to start the first week of February. That's Monday, right? That's in 3 days. So yeah. Just DM me on Twitter. I'll get back to you.
Awesome. We'll link to Jason's Twitter, the Bitcoin Policy Institute's Twitter in the notes. So go check those out. And Jason, thank you again. Extremely important work. I'm sure we'll be talking about this again at some point in the next 6 months.
Sounds great. Honored to be on your show, Marty. Big fan. Thanks a lot.
Tell everybody at the Bitcoin John I said what's up on Monday.
Got it.
All right. Peace and love, freaks.